Mini episode 448 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everybody, to the FDH Lounge, a joint edition with Sportsology Radio. And we are coming at you from the Cardboard Connection Radio booth at the IX Center for the National Sports Collectible entity and the biggest one in the nation. Russ Cohen here with me and providing the facilities that we are sitting at. And Russ, this is quite a show. You've been here a couple different times as an exhibitor. This is quite a big thing here. This is my first time seeing it through these eyes. But what are your thoughts here on what is day three of the show, counting the first abbreviated day?
It's pretty amazing. It really is. I mean, you look at the crowd, the amount of people, the legends that are signing. You look at the fans here that are buying everywhere. A friend of yours just came up and showed us a pretty rare tobacco card. It's just, and he said he's one of the foremost owners of those tobacco cards with the Polarbacks. I didn't know that. That's good to know that.
Yeah.
And it is kind of funny, too, to find out who does really have a passion for collecting and sort of maybe does it under the radar and you don't know, and then all of a sudden you're going to see them at this show and they're buying.
Yeah, that's how it goes generally. You have guys, like you said, that it's not something that a lot of people generally talk about a lot of the time, although there are some people where it is a big cornerstone of their lives, but there are other people, like you said, where you don't even necessarily know that about them. You mentioned a good friend, Joe Lindway, another part of the extended FDH Lounge family and somebody that I've done a lot of hockey broadcasting over time with, another big Ranger guy, Russ, just like you.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Big fan of your New York Rangers output that you've had over the years, but it's funny because Joe is big into that kind of stuff. I was talking to him this morning and said to him, you know, I'm one of the guys that's here for amateur hour. I said, yeah, I'll be going around. I'm picking up bobbleheads, picking up a few statues, some minor decor issues. But, again, there are people who take this so, so seriously. It is quite an eye-popping spectacle. And, again, for it to be back in Cleveland, I know it is something that, again, really kind of demonstrates the commitment to the market, how well it's done here in the past. And you were telling me before off air that you've been here a couple different times as an exhibitor to this facility. It's a unique one, a converted tank plant of all things. And I'm old enough to remember back in the day.
With the Ferris wheel and amusement park?
Yes, it's got that. But before it was any of those things, the Browns once in a while used to have indoor practices here.
Oh, really?
I remember seeing some TV footage, yeah.
Before they made the bubbles?
Yes, before that, yeah.
Wow.
When this place was just kind of vacated, I think it was that in-between point between when it was the tank plant and when it became the IX Center, which it did in the 1980s. And it's a unique place. It's got to be one of the bigger facilities of its kind really out there. I mean, and I'm seeing even today there's some areas that are curtained off. So this is just a gigantic, gigantic facility.
Yeah, we're having fun here. Yesterday I got punched in the jaw accidentally by Rob Bertrand. He was throwing some T-shirts, and he reared back and he hit me with the mic, went right into my jaw, and somebody said they heard the noise, but I'm fine. It's the first time I've gotten hit in the face in a while, and I got through it okay. So that was fun. We did that. We did a lot of things. We had Carlos Baeger the other day. That was fun. We're hosting everything up on the Amazon stage here, which is great. So we're really, you know, we're having a good time. We've done this show as far back as 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And 2002, you know, I remember seeing John Cena walking around. Really incognito. I mean, he may have been signing at one of the wrestling company's booths, but that's it. And he was just buying jerseys and got him to take a picture with my partner Doug's daughter Angelica, who's, you know, now graduating high school. And he was wearing the padlock back then. And, you know, it's kind of fun. A lot of guys have passed through here. Bob Feller a million times, of course, because it wouldn't be a show if Bob Feller wasn't signing.
Well, that means it's not a show this time because, unfortunately, Bob Feller has gone to the great Autograph Pavilion in the sky. But
yep.
It is we're getting by pretty good with oh, with just, you know, the likes of, you know, a Dr. J, a Bobby Hull, et cetera. We'll try to get by with just that. I was looking at the list of names.
Bobby Hull will be here. Yeah.
Wow.
He's going to be here, and he's going to be on stage with us.
Wow.
So that's, yeah.
Something to look forward to, yeah. I mean, it's the list of names at this thing is just truly unbelievable. I was joking with you before, too, about the regional nature of the thing here.
Yes.
In terms of, God bless Sonny Siebert, but in no other city is he going to be one of the guys that's on the VIP list. But it's Cleveland.
And, yes.
You know, he threw a no-hitter here.
Yes.
Those are the kind of things that happen.
Hey, there was Len Barker talk the other day,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
For the perfect game.
Yeah, huge here, you know, in the rest of the country. With all due respect, probably crickets, but I mean, he's a legend in this town, Russ.
Yeah, well, what does it take to be a legend in Cleveland, really? You just have to win. It has to be just a moment in time, right? Because there's no real winning.
Yeah.
The winning tradition, 1954, so it's a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that that team with 111 wins that actually didn't win the World Series. And then 1964 with the NFL with the championship for the Browns, the last championship.
64, right.
Unless you count. As some people do, I don't know, would you count this, Russ, in the late 1980s, the Cleveland Forks?
No.
In major indoor soccer?
No.
Okay.
All doesn't right. count.
Okay. Those were fun games, though.
Yes.
But back in the day. I think I went to one or two of those out at the old late lamented Richfield Coliseum. You ever make it out there, Russ?
No, I never have. But to me, the drought is still on because that doesn't count. But it is fun to talk about, and that's really what this is about. We can go back to the AFC, and it wasn't the championship game. I guess it was the round before that. Mm-hmm. When Bernie Kosar beat the Jets, Mark Gastineau had the roughing the quarterback penalty. It was probably like 82.
86.
86,
it
sorry.
It was the week before the drive.
That's
actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the week before the drive in 86. And then, it was the next week that Ernest Biner fumbled the
exquisite golf.
Was it the next week that he had the big fumble and kept you guys from winning the championship game?
Well, it's funny because, you know, in this town there are so many different things that are the bane of our existence. That was actually the next year. The fumble was completely unto itself. The year before was the drive. Elway goes 98 yards on
that's
us
right.
because Marty was playing the prevent.
That's right.
In all of his infinite wisdom.
Yes.
But what's funny is, I didn't know prior to being friends with you, the whole thing about that the Jet fans, and of course, that was a memorable game the week before it was, and I have a couple of friends who were at that game and who left early. Everybody's got stories of that, I suppose, of big epic games.
Well, they were like 10 points down with a minute 30 to go. It looked impossible.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was going to happen, but then what did end up happening was we came back, we won that game. I think it was Mark Mosley, of all people, with the
it was like a 23-20 win or something in overtime.
I think the last guy in the league that
I called out sick for work.
Did you?
And I was sicker after the game.
yeah, that was devastating. But it's funny because, like, in this town, the drive is on a short list of things most painful. But I didn't really realize, again, prior to knowing you, that if you're a Jets fan, the week before, I don't know if it's quite at that level, but it's pretty bad because that looked like a window for the Jets to be able to
get
through.
No, it's bad.
Yeah.
I met Bernie Kosar, and we chatted about it when he was a part owner of the Florida Panthers, and the draft was down in Sunrise in 2001. We went to an event, and Bernie Kosar was there, and I said, I'm a Jet fan, and he just smiled. He smiled. He shook my hand. He didn't say he was sorry, and I don't blame him.
Yeah.
And we had a nice chat about it. But, yeah, Mark Gastineau basically handed the Browns that game.
Yeah, he did.
No offense to Bernie. He made the comeback. He did. And he made the plays he needed to make. But without that penalty, it wouldn't have happened.
Exactly. And Webster Slaughter, one of the more under-heralded wide receivers of recent decades, making the plays there as well. And, yeah, you know, that whole game, again, that was the last window of anything big Browns-related in this town, aside from isolated occurrences. The 94 team that went 11-5 that was basically like the biggest fluke of all time.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick's one moment of glory here, if you even want to call it that. There's revisionists that are like, see, he was on the verge. No, he wasn't. Shut up. Because Bill Belichick needed to fail here, needed to basically use this situation as his training wheels to go to New England and figure things out.
So people don't like Bill Belichick in Cleveland?
Not at all. No. Well, because he canned Bernie, and that was the whole thing. He set him up to fail.
He brought in Vinny,
and the Browns get off to a 2-0 start that year with Bernie, and he's grumpy about it because, like, I can't pull him for Vinny now, and pretty soon he's designing bootlegs for him.
Right,
and
I remember that,
Are you going to design bootlegs for Bernie if you're
no,
really
he couldn't
the
run.
But no.
The one thing about Bernie Kosar is he couldn't run.
No, not at all.
Never, even when he was young.
Yeah, so Belichick was doing everything he could to play to his weaknesses. And then what happened, and people tend to forget this, was when Bernie was cut, Vinny Testaverde actually was injured. You're looking at a situation where Todd Filcox was the guy that Bernie Kosar was cut for, not Vinny Testaverde. We started Todd Filcox the next game.
Wow.
And what was amazing was Bernie went to the Cowboys, and I'm trying to think. He may have started. I think he started right off the bat because Troy Aikman was injured. And that game actually outdrew, I think, the Browns in the local ratings that day. I may be remembering this wrong, but this is the sign of a true Cleveland bitterman. I have this. You talk about memorabilia, and this is something that if the site Straight Cash Homie was still around, I should be photographed wearing this jersey. I have a Kosar Cowboys jersey from 93.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Number 19 Cowboys.
You know, it's amazing what sports fans will hold on to, good and bad, and they will. They'll bring up all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And so that's, I always get a kick out of that. Doug Cataldo's going to come on here and say something, or he's just unplugging the mic. It's all good.
That's a rare item to have there, that kind of a Kosar Cowboys jersey. One wonders if Bernie was here, what his face would look like if he were signing the jersey, if it were presented to him. I think he would probably be happy for the loyalty, because the people of Cleveland have been pretty loyal to Bernie. I would say this. We are loyal to our own here, and I don't know how much that comes across to somebody coming in from the outside.
I think it comes across.
Okay.
I mean, look, what I first was, as a Jewish guy, Al Rosen, I always heard good stories about him and looked him up because of that and saw that he was revered in Cleveland. He was a great all-star player, and I think he's still revered in Cleveland, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he did win. I mean, that's a big deal.
Right.
But I still got the fact that he, you know, was treated very well.
Yeah, and again, I think a lot of that gets lost in, although maybe not so much over the last month or so now that LeBron James is back in Cleveland, but there was a sense there in terms of Cleveland being bitter and everything like that. And again, the jersey burning and all that kind of stuff was really just by a few miscreants. The funny thing is there were every bit as many of those incidents captured in Miami over the last month or so as happened in Cleveland years ago, including LeBron's picture being blacked out on a mural. By the way, this was a mural that took 2 years to complete that was in public there, and it had the faces of the team. And yeah, his face was blacked out on that thing. So,
well, for people listening to this show, I'm going to show you a picture, and you could retweet it when you get on Twitter.
Okay.
And I posted it this morning. And so basically, the hashtag was Russ Fest.
Okay.
Because there's that LeBron Fest going on in Akron.
Okay.
And so there's me jamming.
Nice.
And so on Instagram, it comes up as RussFest hashtag Cleveland.
Excellent. Yes, that is no special effects were involved in the production of this picture, ladies and gentlemen. But
well,
yeah, that
there was a help.
It's unusual enough to see anything attached with you with basketball, especially as
right.
it relates to hockey, baseball,
right.
the things that you're more commonly associated with there.
Right. But, you know, coming in, I listened to a lot of radio and all the LeBron love. But we were chatting about it the other day, how things have turned around here. Now you got that old LeBron jersey. You could take it back out. If you had collected his cards and you put them away, you can bring them back out.
Yep.
So, in a way, he's revived the LeBron industry in this area, and it's like a cottage industry. But what would happen if he stepped on the court and got hurt pretty quickly? Like, I don't know what would happen to the expectations then. What would you think it would change, or you think they'd still be positive because they'd be like, well, we'll wait for him to come back? And how do you think that'd play out?
Well, there's, and I don't even want to bring up this phrase, but I will, because it just nauseates me. There are a lot of things that I don't like about the attitude of Cleveland and its fans. One of the biggest things is self-pity, and there's an execrable phrase out there. Only in Cleveland, you will hear the OIC from everybody when that it could only happen if he came back to Cleveland. You know, if he stayed in Miami, he would have won 12 more championships. He's got to come back to Cleveland and blow out his knee and ruin everything. So that's what everyone would be thinking at that time.
Okay,
because
so
we
a
have
defeatist sort of attitude.
Well, and that's what's funny, too, is that everybody's riding so high on that. And it may seem like it's turning on a dime to go to that, but the thing you have to know about the psychology of the area is it's always right under the surface.
Yeah.
So it's like you're not even aware of it. Most people aren't until something goes bad. And, again, the funny thing is geographically, where we're at here at the IX Center, we are but a few miles down the road, very, very close, borderline walking distance from the Browns training camp facility. Johnny Football out there as we speak, warming up right now. And again, Cleveland is a big media circus these days with the national media and the Four Letter Network and all of them in town for Johnny Manziel. And there are similar expectations, which frankly is a lot more ludicrous than the LeBron stuff.
I mean, sure.
As far as it goes with LeBron, the Cavs are the de facto Eastern Conference favorites at this moment, regardless
yes.
of a K-Love deal or anything else. The Browns, far from a Super Bowl contender at this point in time, but try telling that to anybody in this town, it's all whipped up because of Johnny Football. But there's the same kind of thing. If Johnny Football goes down this fall, oh, only in Cleveland. If he'd gotten drafted by the Squealers, they'd have won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't think Johnny will start the year.
No.
And it's only a maybe he'll get in this year because, I'll be honest, I don't know if Johnny got in good enough shape in the offseason to play in the NFL this year. He might need to sit a year and really figure it out. And that would be okay. I mean, sometimes guys have to do that.
Great point. And I have to say, I'm a guy that expected absolutely zero when the Browns ended up acquiring Brian Hoyer last year. And granted, it was a short window, but boy, did he look good. And there's no reason whatsoever to start Johnny Manziel day one simply because
right.
of that. Hoyer is back. He's recovered from the knee
injury.
He's
a big strapping guy.
Yeah.
Might as well see what he's got.
Yeah, and I actually am impressed. That speaks well to your perception of the situation to say Johnny Manziel's not going to start day one because you're not getting that from the national media. The
no.
national media thinks, oh, at day one, it'll happen. If
right.
you're in Cleveland, you know better. If you're in Cleveland, you know the
right.
Browns aren't going to rush into this.
Right.
The one thing, too, and the Browns were putting out some stuff recently, we're not real happy with all his offseason gaga. I have to say I'm profoundly unsympathetic to that. He is who Dennis Green thought he was. You don't draft Johnny Manziel and expect this kind of garbage not to happen. And again,
true.
I would have rather had Teddy Bridgewater, truth be told, and as I've said on a number of different occasions. But again, you know, Manziel is what he is. I think he may be a gimmick-type quarterback. Again, people talk about how well he does when he rolls out, how well he does in space. Last I checked, the NFL was still a league for pocket quarterbacks. By the way, side note, the aforementioned Joe Lindway flashing a big amount of cash.
He sold his card. There's no question.
He did. He did. Another Cleveland success story. We're talking Cleveland success stories and Joe Lindway's transaction.
He's got a few bucks on him. Buy my book.
Is one of them. Yes. Yes. The next Ranger book. There are apparently exactly 100 things that every Ranger fan needs to know before they die. Is that not correct?
Yeah. Yep. And okay. But my book that's currently out now, Baseball's Best Rookies, has Joe Charbonneau in it, who
yes.
is definitely revered in this town. And I liked him a lot. I did.
Yeah.
Because he scraped off the tattoo with a razor blade. That's why I like him.
Opens up beer bottles with his eye socket.
Yep.
Those
they don't make guys like that anymore.
No, they don't. No, they don't. The summer of 1980, it was magical because, again, this is a team that had just been mired in doom and gloom. My favorite player.
And it was a tired stadium at that point, right?
Oh, yeah, it was. Although, again, guys like me kind of romanticize it because, to me, it'll always be Jacobs Field, not Progressive Field. Down at the Jake, I refuse to buy into the corporate BS there and call it by the name that the Dolans are making a boatload of money to have people call it. Down at the Jake, it's an antiseptic atmosphere. It's not a bad place to watch.
No, but I like the ballpark. It's a nice ballpark.
I have a lot of fond memories, but it's like, old Cleveland Municipal Stadium, there's some romance to that crap hole. It's all rose-tinted glasses when I look back at those days.
Same as Shea Stadium for
yeah.
Met fans. Same
yeah,
thing.
Exactly. You know, and my favorite player of that time, Andre Thornton, what a great inspirational
I remember him.
Story. Yeah,
good homer
back,
hitter.
Great power hitter, bouncing back from the death of his, I believe, his wife and his
yeah,
daughter
yeah.
At the time. And, again, as a little kid, my favorite player and somebody who got no help. And all of a sudden in 1980,
you got
Andre Thornton and you got Super Joe, and we could believe for a while. And
yeah.
just as a little kid, those were great, great memories. So to read about that in your book, I was thrilled. I pointed it out to my brother. I got that book, by the way, for my nephew
oh,
for
that's
Christmas
nice.
So that he could read about Super Joe and some
yeah.
of the other stuff in there. Baseball.
So I made you
rookies.
Happy. For
yes. You did
as an Indians fan, I made you momentarily happy again.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, as an Indians fan as well, I mean, you know, momentarily happy is just about all we ever get. I will say, we talked before about the drive and the fumble. To me, I'd say the worst of any of them, though. In my mind,
I know who it is. Can I tell you who it is? Is it Jose Mesa?
It actually is. Yeah.
Yeah
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. That. Well, Yeah, I was sort of hinting Indians there. So if it was going to be Indians, yeah. I mean, 95, there was no one defining moment. We got to the World Series and just got steamrolled by that pitching staff. But 97, and I will tell you, myself and everybody else in town, we were all screaming at the TV not to pull Brian Anderson. And I understand it's the textbook move. You put your ace in.
And he wasn't like a big strapping pitcher either. He was like a six-inning pitcher, really.
Yeah. And Mesa was a guy that, again, just, he was on the downward slide at that point. And there were, he of course, was
Senior dealing, Smoke.
Yes, yes.
But the smoke was leaving him.
He was dealing with some off-field incidents that
yes.
year that were unfortunate. There were many of unfortunate jokes in town about Jose was working on his split finger down in the flats. You heard a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, nobody wanted him to go in that game. You know, Anderson had the eighth inning nailed down there. It was the chance to put it away. Jared Wright would be remembered as a World Series
Anderson
champion.
Was in the bullpen then? Because I remember him as a starter, too.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Jared Wright was the starter, the rookie that started Game 7.
Okay.
And he's primarily remembered in this town in the bad way of, in that offseason, we had the chance to flip him for Pedro Martinez and did not. We balked at the price of like, oh, well, he's going to be Pedro Martinez on, you know, less money for a number of years, showing that even Dick Jacobs back in the day had his proto-Larry Dolan moments. But, you know, that
And look, Mesa ended up as a Met after a while, and he was terrible, too.
Okay, well, I can believe it, yeah, because he ended
Pretty
up a
sure.
bunch of different places. And, yeah, it was... That was just the most painful one of them all because you could see it coming. And it, to me, my two worst moments as a sports fan, I would have to say, were that. And then in 2009, watching my Detroit Red Wings blow it on home ice Game 7 against the hated Pittsburgh Penguins, of all things, there. Which, again, if you're a Red Wings fan in Cleveland, I just have to come back to that double whammy again, losing to a Pittsburgh team Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. So... Those two memories there, but yeah, I mean that, and I remember. I mean, my parents were out of town that weekend. There was they would go to a couple of different Ohio State games per year, generally at least about two games per year, and they were watching that game. I don't know why they were still out of town on a Sunday night. Maybe they were staying down there longer. But I remember hearing about this afterwards, and that after the game, my mom was just weeping hysterically after Game 7.
Wow.
And my dad was kind of bemused because, like, to my dad, there's not much outside of Ohio State football vis-a-vis sports. His interests don't extend that much further. So he was just very bemused about how she was taking it. But, I mean, while I might not have been crying
hysterically. No, Mesa did not play for the Mets. I thought they had him once.
Okay.
Doesn't look like they did.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I felt the same way. Well, you could be forgiven because Mesa went on a very forgettable end of his career tour.
Oh, he did.
A number of teams in baseball.
Pittsburgh, Colorado, Philly.
Yeah.
I thought he made it to New York, too, but he didn't.
That sounded plausible enough to me. Yeah,
it did. So, I know.
You know, so, again, I don't know if brighter moments are ahead for the Tribe in this town, nor necessarily the Browns, although I've said it. You know, cut and save on this one here. I think the Browns will have a top five or top 10 defense in the league this year. I think they will be that good that soon with the talent that they have, with the scheme that they're implementing.
Are they making the playoffs, Rick?
No, they're not. And right now I'm picking them for 5 wins because I think they have a Carolina-esque wide receiving core without Josh Gordon. Having said that, all the tea leaves kind of look like, especially if Josh Gordon goes to rehab, that he may get this sucker knocked down. I'm thinking maybe even to 8 games because...
I will tell you, I think it's a ridiculous premise because... He's been caught twice before.
Yeah.
This is the third time.
Yeah.
And if you're dumb enough to be around guys, even if the secondhand smoke thing is true, sorry, you lose.
Yeah, I understand that, and I am not a defender on that point. I will say, FDH senior editor Jason Jones, and I have kind of blanched when I've seen this. He's got the free Josh Gordon thing up on Facebook. I'm just like, come on, bro. You're like Squealer fan defending Raplesberger here. You can't be doing that. You got to be intellectually honest. I agree with you. Having said that, just analyzing it, the optics of the situation. When Ray Rice is getting 2 games for uppercutting
his
wife,
I know.
I think that's that more than anything, I think, may get Gordon down to 8. The
yes.
fact that Rice was ridiculously underpunished, I think, is going to serve to help Gordon. And the big thing is if he goes into rehab or has. The rumor is after the last DUI, he went into rehab.
Okay.
If the league can justify that, you're like, you know what?
He's going to be better.
Yeah. And so I'm not saying he deserves to get
no,
a knockout
I get
in
it.
8 games. Having said that, I understand the frustration of Browns fans. And what I said to Jason at the time of the draft, I was screaming at him, why didn't the Browns draft any wide receivers?
Well, I heard something the other day that he's practicing with the third team, and that's a telling sign because that means the Browns know he's going to get suspended because he wouldn't be practicing with the third team otherwise.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for some period of time anyways. And, you know, Jason has cited to me, look at what they have here with Andrew Hawkins and Travis Benjamin and all these guys that they drafted. I'm like, yeah, but they're all slot guys. Last I saw, you have to start somebody at the X and the Z spots there. You got to put guys on the outside. Of all people, my dentist said to me the other day, a great guy and a noted fan of sports, was telling me, they might put Josh Cameron at wide receiver. And I'm like, well, that's great. You take an elite tight end and you put him so a cornerback can cover him, and you take away the mismatch.
Yeah.
So there are no good answers here.
Well, this year I think my Jets will do a little better than your Browns, but I will leave you with this.
Okay.
I saw as I was going to get you that Jim Tomei was signing. Would he be the biggest signer now that maybe you could get in Cleveland, other than a Manziel or somebody like that from the past, or LeBron, obviously?
All right, for recent past, I would have to think so. He's got to be way up there. There's a lot of reverence.
I mean, Jim Brown obviously is going to be around too, but
yeah. If so, you're talking like 90s and 2000s.
Yes, for younger people.
Okay, I will say also too, and this is borderline for younger. But there's a lot of reverence in this town still for Mark Price. And when he came close to getting the Cavs coaching job, you saw that again. Having said that, I'm like most people that was like, you know what?
The Michael Jordan thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'd rather have David Blatt. God bless Mark Price. He's an icon in this town. It probably would be Tomei. I have to agree with you off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're going to wrap this up, Rick.
All right, pal. It's been outstanding doing this. Thank you so much for getting everything going here. Again, a pleasure broadcasting with my good friend Russ Cohen of Sportsology.
At the 35th National Collectors Convention, we're here at the Cardboard Connection radio booth. We'll see you soon.
Excellent. Thank you, folks.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.